Now, a new investigation from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel finds that pediatric asthma is not an equal opportunity disease in the city. ER visits and hospitalizations for childhood asthma disproportionately affect Black and low-income families in Milwaukee. An analysis by the Journal Sentinel found that the top seven zip codes with most ER visits for pediatric asthma are all predominantly Black. There are a lot of barriers to getting appropriate care for low-income families, but there are also things that make asthma symptoms worse for low-income kids. For one thing, substandard housing in the city often has a host of asthma triggers, things like mold, dust, and extreme temperatures. You could join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you or your kids have asthma? Have you found it difficult to get regular preventive care? What's standing in the way? Have you had difficulty finding maybe a place to live that doesn't have a lot of asthma triggers yourself? Call 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your experiences, your questions. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Talis Shelbourne is the author of that report on inequities in childhood asthma. She's an investigative solutions reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel with a focus on affordable housing, environment, and equity issues. Talis, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
And Dr. Daniel Jackson is professor of pediatrics and medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, also principal investigator of the Childhood Asthma in Urban Settings Network, which looks at why children in urban communities develop more severe asthma and how to improve outcomes. Dr. Jackson, thanks for joining us again.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Tell us, let's start with you and your report. You looked at these disparities in the Milwaukee area when it comes to especially untreated asthma. What? Tell us a little more about what you found.
Yeah, so we found that the zip codes with the most uncontrolled asthma are located in the central city. And we found that they're very disproportionate to the more affluent kind of zip codes around that area. We found that children from communities of color and low-income families are at the highest risk. And one interesting thing about those zip codes is that they're located in very near proximity to highways and high-traffic areas. So think about I-43, Capitol Drive, Fond du Lac. And when you couple that with kind of substandard housing conditions and those triggers that you mentioned earlier, it really makes those particular communities more vulnerable to having uncontrolled asthma.
And before we dig into some more of those disparities, Dr. Jackson, what do we mean by uncontrolled asthma?
So uncontrolled asthma really means that we've got children who are having quite a few day-to-day symptoms interfering with their daily activities, whether that be play or exercise. And then importantly, a lot of these children are having severe asthma attacks that could have them end up within urgent cares, emergency departments, or hospitalizations. And all of these have a major impact both on the child and their family.
Talis, you interviewed some parents especially and some people who work and teach who are teachers or work in community groups. Can you share the impact of this uncontrolled asthma on these kids?
Yeah, I mean, it really is all relative. So one of the things about asthma is it tends to affect a lot of children at night when there's generally more relaxed lung function in general. And so those children then have poor sleep. They come to school. Maybe there's triggers at school. So then they're sleep deprived and they're having asthma symptoms. So they can't focus as well. They might be withheld from physical activities. And that has a psychological impact. It also has an impact on their, you know, the other aspects of their physical health. So it really does create a problem, not just for that child, but also for the parent too. If they have to pick them up and take off of work, that might become an issue depending on how frequent it is. It's really a disruptive disease, and we really wanted to take time in this project to try and illustrate that.
And tell us one of the causes you found: substandard housing. A lot of people could only afford so much in a house. It's a tough market now, of course, to find quality housing. What kind of things did you find in houses that or in apartments that were contributing to this problem?
So it's really all of the things that you mentioned. The mold is a big one. That's one that can be, it has very different ways. It can be someone who's allergic to mold. Mold itself is a toxin, or it can just be an irritant. There's also dust mites. There's pet dander. There's volatile organic compounds. So you think about maybe a parent thinks they're doing the best thing by their child by cleaning with a lot of bleach, but that actually is an irritant. So there's a lot of different kind of pests is another big one, different triggers and that you find specifically in substandard housing that can harm children. And carpeting is just another one because it tends to hold a lot of those things that we just talked about. So droppings from pest, whether that's mold or dust, because mold tends to, the mold spores can travel. And so if you have a place with carpet, it gets trapped in there. I mean, there's so many different triggers that if you're not aware specifically what triggers your child, you can really be exposing them to a lot of risk for more attacks and symptoms.
Dr. Jackson, Talis focused on Milwaukee. Does that match up with what you hear from urban communities around the country?
Yes, unfortunately, this is a pervasive problem in urban communities all across the country. You know, children living in urban environments are exposed to a variety of different things that are problematic. Talis also alluded to, you know, living close to highways, so poor air quality and pollution is problematic, in addition to living conditions, and then also the variety of limitations in terms of accessing care. And all of these things really come together to lead to, unfortunately, just unacceptable outcomes for children with asthma that are living in urban environments.
We're talking about asthma and health disparities when it comes to causes and treatment of asthma. Lower income communities in Milwaukee and elsewhere in the country, as we're hearing, often Black communities in Milwaukee and elsewhere, more at risk, especially for kids, for uncontrolled asthma. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions for our guests. If you've seen this firsthand before in your life, in your own community, 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Dr. Jackson, before we get back to the disparities, we're talking about uncontrolled asthma. I guess there's some good news when it comes to asthma that it can be treated. People could live fairly normal lives if they have access to treatment and prevention, right?
Absolutely. You know, whenever I see patients and families with asthma, you know, I tell them that my goal is for them to live a normal, active life. I don't want their child to not be able to participate in sports or other activities. And we have really excellent medications available that can control symptoms for many children. Children that have more severe asthma, we've been fortunate over the last decade to have some additional medications come on the market, which can be really helpful for children with particular types of asthma and more severe disease. But ultimately, we also want to attack things at the root of the problem and help with disparities through elimination of exposures, reducing exposures and the like, and not just relying on medications.
And tell us, we've been talking about the causes. You also write about a lack of access to the kind of health care that Dr. Jackson was talking about a moment ago. Can you talk about that part of the problem?
Yeah, so the best way to avoid ER visits is by having that regular care from a primary doctor. And once a child is diagnosed, a lot of doctors told me it's important for them to see a specialist. And that specialist can help determine how severe the asthma is by testing lung function. They can identify specific triggers. They can tell you if the child maybe needs a spacer. They can teach proper inhaler technique. They explain the difference between medications, a controller, and a rescue inhaler. So it's really advantageous to be able to access that. But for a lot of reasons, residents who live in lower income neighborhoods tend to have trouble being able to access that. I mean, they tend to not only live in higher rates, areas with higher rates of substandard housing, but they also tend to have more lower wage, kind of zero tolerance jobs, right? And so that means, you know, as one of the school nurses from our story put it, you have to lose pay to get care because maybe you don't have PTO and you may not have the luxury of being able to take off of work for hours to go to a specialist. There's also difficulties with transportation. Especially if that specialist doesn't live near your neighborhood and you have to go a long distance to see them. So there's a lot of barriers to that type of care, which really tends to reduce risk for attacks, you know, higher rates of symptoms, and just generally makes life easier for pediatric asthma patients.
Dr. Jackson, is this a problem you see being tackled in communities around the country when it comes to asthma, trying to make sure people have access to the kind of treatments that you can provide.
Absolutely. And, you know, ultimately, as Talis outlined in her story as well, there are community health workers and others that can really serve as important liaisons between the healthcare community and patients and families. The challenge is that we have limited resources for those programs, and we need more of them. They've clearly been shown to be beneficial. We also have had a lot of efforts through our professional organizations to liaison with the schools. So when kids are in school, it's an opportunity to really improve their health outcomes as well. You know, they spend a lot of their week in the school. There are nurses within the school that can be really helpful and can help facilitate, you know, the delivery of these important medications, the controller medications Talis talked about, to try and improve outcomes for our children.
Dr. Daniel Jackson is with us, professor of pediatrics and medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, and Talis Sherborne, investigative solutions reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who just wrote a big series on asthma and kids in the Milwaukee area, looking at why childhood asthma disproportionately affects kids in low-income neighborhoods. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions for our guest? What do you think should be done to address some of these causes, including housing that could put tenants at risk for health issues, including asthma? Has this been a problem in your own life, in your own family? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk about racial and socioeconomic disparities when it comes to childhood asthma, especially untreated childhood asthma. Our guests are Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigative solutions reporter Talis Sherborne and UW-Madison pediatrics and medicine professor Dr. Daniel Jackson. And you could join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions for our guests, maybe your own experiences with asthma yourself or in your family. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Bob joins us now on the phone from Kenosha. Bob, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to ask about, Bob?
Well, I was interested in knowing if they'd studied the diet and nutrition aspect and if that affected. Because I got asthma at a later age, in my mid-50s. And I ended up clearing that up with like a primarily plant-based diet. So I didn't know, you know, if that had been studied at all.
Bob, thanks for the call. Dr. Jackson, do we know about nutritional causes or solutions for asthma?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there is a strong association between obesity and the development of asthma that can happen in children and in adults as well. And there are certain types of asthma in adults that are associated with what we call metabolic syndrome or systemic inflammation. So in those kinds of cases, weight loss, improved diet has been shown to be beneficial. So for certain patients, definitely something that can contribute to disease.
Bob, thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. Talis, a few minutes ago, Dr. Jackson was talking about ways to help connect people with asthma or who have kids with asthma with health services. You write about that some in your piece. There are some people, I guess, navigators in a way, trying to help people get the help they need. What kind of things did you see in Milwaukee?
Yeah, so I'm really, really glad Dr. Jackson mentioned that, because part three of the project is coming out and it focuses kind of exclusively on solutions, and community health workers are a big piece of that. We found in speaking to people who are engaged in that work that these community health workers can act as literal translators sometimes in some communities, or they can just help translate medical lingo to families to understand what it is they need to do to protect their child and make sure that they're not suffering asthma symptoms. Another thing, yeah, we did find that there were community navigators who can help kind of put together the housing component with the health component. So maybe that's providing, you know, vinegar-based cleaning solutions or special vacuums that, you know, don't make the problem worse, as well as providing other types of home cleaning education to these families. But in some cases, it is a bit tricky because there's only so much you can do about your home environment, especially if you don't own it. But they do work with families to try and reduce as many of those triggers as they can.
Dr. Jackson, you mentioned getting at the root causes, all the things we've been talking about. Do we Americans operate that way very well? It seems like we'd like to, you know, look at the disease and have a cure. Do we have effective ways of approaching problems that you know, include things like housing and neighborhood affordability and things like that?
So there's been a lot of work over the course of the last several decades to help try and address this problem. The NIH actually has funded both the Inner City Asthma Consortium and now the Childhood Asthma and Urban Settings Network to try and improve outcomes for children. And ultimately, things like comprehensive reduction of exposures like cockroaches, environmental tobacco smoke, sources of NO2 in the environment, and things like that have actually been shown to work quite well to reduce symptom burden and prevent asthma attacks. The problem is they've been very difficult to pay for and have them be used on a wide scale. So I agree with you that unfortunately a lot of times our system is based on treating things after the fact rather than preventing them in the first place.
Dr. Daniel Jackson from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health and Talis Shelborn, investigative solutions reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at asthma among kids, often untreated, especially in low-income neighborhoods, Black neighborhoods in Milwaukee. Talis, let's put a face on this, if you will. You follow the story of Angel Harris, her kid with asthma, her experiences with substandard housing. Can you tell us a little bit about their struggle with this?
Yeah, so this was kind of an unfortunate but commonplace situation where a tenant moves into a building. Maybe they have pre-existing asthma, as Angel did, but they encounter a lot of these environmental triggers that we've talked about that really exacerbate that asthma. I know that she had to go to the hospital multiple times and get stronger medications and was using them more frequently because of the conditions of that home. And Angel's case, too, really revealed kind of a big loophole that we have in our code enforcement, which I found is apparently common among a lot of cities' building codes, which is that the landlord is not required to address mold itself. So they can be ordered to address the cause of mold if it's like a leaking pipe or something like that. But there's no specific statute addressing mold growth. And when I asked the Department of Neighborhood Services, they explained that they don't issue orders for mold. They don't test for mold. They really don't have anything to do with it. And that really becomes a problem when rent abatement and withholding programs are tied directly to unfulfilled code enforcement orders, because then, you know, there's really no way to really address that problem. So that was one of the really kind of surprising things that we found in working on that story with Angel, but also one of the loopholes that maybe if addressed could help reduce some of the instances of triggers for these families.
Dr. Jackson, I wanted to talk to you about some research you've been working on a monoclonal antibody treatment working with uncontrolled asthma. Can you talk a little bit about that work?
Yeah, absolutely. We did this work through our Inner City Asthma Consortium and now CAUSE Network to look at children that had a specific type of inflammation or a specific type of asthma called eosinophilic asthma, and who had experienced many asthma attacks in the past, to see if targeting that specific type of inflammation with the monoclonal antibody called mepolizumab could reduce their risk of severe asthma attacks. And it did reduce the risk of asthma attacks by about 27%. But what we found as well was that even the children that were treated with basically standard of care and access to specialists had a great reduction in their asthma attack rate, even if they didn't get that mepolizumab antibody. So, you know, ultimately what we found was that there's a lot of important aspects to asthma care that can impact outcomes. And the big thing that we're doing moving forward for the individual patient that we see in front of us is trying to understand the characteristics of their asthma as best that we can in order to target our therapies the best we can to prevent disease. So it's different, different approaches to this very important problem. There's addressing the root causes, and then there's also addressing, children that are experiencing a lot of severe asthma attacks, and unfortunately are at risk for really poor long-term outcomes and even death from asthma.
And Talis, you mentioned your next part of the story will focus on solutions in the Milwaukee area. Big picture, do you get a sense, having talked to so many people about this, there's a sense of urgency to deal with this asthma problem in these low-income communities?
Yeah, there is. And one of the things that we found initially is that Wisconsin was undergoing some expansions to its current asthma program to include things like home remediation. And so we have a separate piece about that that's coming out as well. But what we found is that what really helps families is education around triggers, kind of having access to that home remediation component, having the support of community health workers, and policy changes to housing enforcement and how we fund some of those medical components. As Dr. Jackson was saying, I mean, there's definitely some changes in the Wisconsin system where they're hoping to shift to kind of more of a Medicaid reimbursement kind of structure that's going to help increase the level of funding that they're able to access, and discussions around how community health workers are paid, as well as some of those policy discussions around how we enforce our building codes and enforce code violations with landlords especially. So that's those are some of the solutions that we found, things that worked in other areas. And there's also going to be a particular examination into the Greensboro, North Carolina neighborhood called Cottage Grove, where I visited, where there was kind of a really grassroots resident-led coalition that helped address a particular apartment complex that was really, really proven to be an asthma hazard for that community.
We'll watch for that reporting. Thanks to both of our guests today, Talis Shelborn, investigative solutions reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Dr. Daniel Jackson, professor of pediatrics and medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. They joined us today for a look at disparities in childhood asthma.